One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to Pediapod, and I'll start with a brief service announcement. For the past year or so, the podcast has centred each episode on an early career investigator and one of their recently published paediatric research manuscripts. But from 2024 onwards, we're diversifying the feed and will rotate between essentially three different formats. The first will explore one of the paper collections from the paediatric research website. The second will shine a light on a senior investigator who's had a lasting impact in paediatric research. You may previously have heard conversations with Max Vento and Donna Ferrero as two recent examples. And the third episode type will explore what's hot and new in a particular specialty. So today's episode is a collections episode, and I'll be speaking with Carrie Nadeau. She recently guest edited a series on global climate change for paediatric research. Here she is.
My name is Dr. Carrie Nadeau. I'm at the Harvard School of Public Health as the Chair of Environmental Health. I also run the Climate Change and Global Environment Center called Sea Change. And then finally, I'm the John Rock Professor of Climate and Population Studies at Harvard. So I'm really excited about being here today with you.
So you sound like a good choice to have guest edited this series on global climate change. Could you give us a sense of why you think now was the right time for pediatric research to have a collection on climate change?
I think now is a critical time. Children, for the most part, don't have a voice. UNICEF reported that a child born today will suffer from at least one climate change event in their lifetime. Not only that, children that are born in inequitably exposed communities, they have been exposed to the environment more so than anyone. And unfortunately, that will compound itself over a child's lifetime. We need to make sure at this juncture, and knowing that the climate literally is on fire and that it's our time as adults to act now, that as pediatricians, as healthcare providers, as parents, as guardians, as people that care about the future, we want to make sure that we can focus on children.
At first glance, you know, you might think that climate change and pediatrics are quite disparate fields of science in a way. So can you give us a sense of how exactly they're linked?
When we think about climate change, we have the opportunity to give anticipatory guidance. We have the opportunity to prevent worsening events, not only because we can reduce greenhouse gases and we can help reduce climate change, and that's us as individuals and us as governments, but also as pediatricians, as healthcare providers. This is how we think. Pediatricians have anticipatory guidance for trauma. We have anticipatory guidance for vaccines. We have anticipatory guidance for what to expect when you're an adolescent. So that's just part of who we are. And when you think about climate change, we have the opportunity to not only educate about climate change and things like heat stress and how that might affect the body of your baby or toddler or five-year-old. But we have the opportunity to not only educate about how bad heat stress is, let's say, for children, which is associated with climate change, but we also can give handouts to say, okay, here's what you want to do. If your baby is in a hot environment, here's what to do. There's all sorts of guidance that as pediatricians we can provide for flooding, for wildfires, for heat stress. So all of these things, Jeff, are really important, and it's embedded in who we are as pediatricians.
Would you say that climate change is particularly relevant within your area of expertise, allergies, asthma, immunology?
Absolutely. So I also practice both in adults and children, see a lot of families with these issues. I do also see patients with autoimmune disease and cancers. So unfortunately, You know, wildfire smoke, air pollution hasn't really seen any boundaries in terms of the globe or ages, but children are at a high chance of having diseases because of this. And we know from COVID, the immune system is such a critical nexus point by which we can understand biology, understand how we respond as the host to outside influences. That includes allergens. So when we get exposed to air pollution, for example, or wildfire smoke, and that lands on our skin, unfortunately, there's already data showing that that activation disrupts the skin barrier and activates the allergic pathway, activates autoimmune disease. So there are now studies as well as work to show that if this happens, this is a response of our body to it. There's also other data to show that if you have a lot of air pollution in your lungs and that affects your blood and your immune system, you're not going to be able to fight viruses very well. So for children, when they get exposed to air pollution, get exposed to heat stress, get exposed to extreme cold, for example, that worsens their asthma, it dysregulates their immune system. And allergies affect at least 40% of the globe. In some regions of the world, sometimes 50% of the children have asthma.
There is, of course, geographical variation in the effects of climate change. There has been this notion in the past that climate change is something that affects the developing world and sort of the much hotter parts of the planet. Would you counter that and say that it's a global problem?
Yes, it's a global problem. It's relevant to everyone, and especially is relevant to the younger age groups. But unfortunately, those people that are under-resourced are more affected by it. They're at higher risk to be able to have long-term consequences. If you live in a place where drought is going to affect your crops and you're not going to be able to eat season to season, like in places in sub-Saharan Africa, that's going to affect your family and your children. That's going to affect pregnant women and their nutrition. But everyone on the planet has been affected by climate change, whether or not it's directly or indirectly, whether or not you were waiting on an IV bag in a hospital in Texas because the IV bag was coming from Puerto Rico where the hurricane hit, or you're directly affected by climate change because you have had wildfire next door in your home near San Francisco. So there's really no boundaries. Dust storms, for example, in the Middle East, they circumnavigate the globe within 3 days. There are ways to go online and look at monitoring so that you are aware of what's happening in your environment, but no one is immune.
And as we've sort of alluded to, this area, this crossover between climate change and as it pertains to pediatrics is quite new. What do we know? Are there any sort of parts of this that are quite well established so far?
I think the major questions that have been answered are, in each degree that it increases, either in centigrade or Fahrenheit, we know how much that's going to worsen your asthma, or how much it's going to worsen your likelihood of having heat stroke, for babies especially. Now, we need to understand that more, but we know that heat stress is bad, that heat stress induces inflammation, that heat stress induces asthma, that it induces other diseases too, and that you can die from heat stress. We know flooding is bad. We know flooding carries diseases. It carries bacteria, and children especially can be more sensitive to those fungi and bacteria than adults. We know climate change is associated with warmth and vector-borne diseases. We know malaria is on the rise. We know dengue is on the rise, and those affect children. Tick-borne diseases are on the rise too, and that's really unfortunate. And again, this is really due to global warming and the changes in our environment. We know that because of the increase in global warming, there's more pollens, and that's dangerous, because that increases allergies and asthma. So these are the things we really know for children are not good. We also know pollution is very bad for children. Wildfire smoke, very bad for their lungs, for their immune system, for their developing heart. They get increases in blood pressure. So a lot of people have studied this. So we know a lot about the bad things that happen. We need to focus on solutions now and see to what extent solutions can help.
Let's discuss that. Where do you think the major gaps in our knowledge of those solutions exist?
I think the gap is in making sure that we understand what solutions are being implemented. Like when a bus goes from a diesel bus to an electric bus in the schoolyard, to what extent before and after does that help someone's asthma? So those are the types of solutions that are being implemented now that we could just test. There's also now conversions of wood stoves or gas stoves to electric stoves. indoor air pollution is very dangerous. We spend 90% of our lives indoors, especially children at schools, and they're spending a lot of time in places where they could be exposed to gas stoves, and we need to know what happens when electric stoves are put in and to what extent their health gets better. So these are the types of things that need to be studied because solutions are being implemented now. We also want to make sure there's no unintended consequences of solution. Like if you're going to be putting in an air filter into a school, make sure that it works, right? And then by measuring the health outcome and seeing whether or not children are improving in their breathing, which is very easily monitored, you could say this age group, it didn't work as well as, let's say, this age group. Or this school, it didn't work as well as that school because they had a different geography. The other thing that's a big gap is, like I was saying, compounding effects over someone's lifetime. We need to have more studies where we're following children over their lifetime to see to what extent these solutions work well or not.
And are we, in your opinion, fully equipped to answer these questions and fill in these gaps? And if not, is it new methodologies we need? Is it new technologies? If you had a magic wand to, you know, speed up the advance of climate change and pediatric research, how would you do it? What do we need?
Great question. You know, right now, we need to broadly educate more people as to what the tools are and how accessible they are. So in general, in the climate change mantra, as well as discussions globally in policy and governance, we have all the technologies. We have the money, actually, to be able to reduce climate change and global warming. We need to have the political willpower. And in that, to be able to create that political will and that good citizenship, we as pediatricians and as researchers, we can try to provide the science towards helping policymakers know that their decisions are good or bad. And to me, we use children as the measurement tool because children are our future. So I think, yes, the tools are there. We have the technology. I would say to have people get very knowledgeable about artificial intelligence, about machine learning, about satellite communications, about making sure that they understand that if their research is going to focus on a solution, have it be community-based, community-driven. The solutions have to be hyper-local. And to me, the solutions need to always study how they're affecting children as well as other vulnerable populations, because if we can't help those populations, then our solutions really didn't work.
And presumably understanding climate change's impacts on children and infants and tackling those problems is going to necessarily be a multidisciplinary struggle. And so who do you think pediatric researchers should be aiming to team up with?
I think there's a lot of wonderful researchers that want to team up with pediatricians. So I know in my own experience, it's been very welcoming. From epidemiologists to data scientists to business people to economicists to be able to understand benefit cost ratio. For every dollar that we put into renewable energy, for example, we get at least $6 out in terms of improving health for children. Like, that's a business directive and a good deal that we should all know about. We also work with government policymakers. We need to make sure that we work with our senators and representatives more. So to me, it's a multidisciplinary team from A to Z. You get your researchers together from different aspects. We need that. We also need ecologists and biologists and people that understand the planet, because biodiversity is important here too. We know a lot about how biodiversity is important for our general health and especially for children. And mental health issues and climate change are a big topic. And I want to make sure we emphasize that today. So that's a big gap of research that I hope people can work on. But yeah, I think that overall, there's a lot of hope and promise. We used to deliver on that, and we do have the tools, technology, and different disciplines need to work together. We can no longer be in our tower or our fishbowl anymore. We need to work across disciplines, and that will best frame our questions and our solutions.
That was Carrie Nadeau from the Harvard School of Public Health. And that's it for this episode. See you next time. I'm Jeff Marsh. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.